nations, and we are a third world nation. Under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, it don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Jeb said he'd deliver Florida, folks, and boy, did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me. 'Cause I'm a poem heating hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels. May we bow to yet all of this sauce. Shoo away the swarms of commuter planes. Find that train ticket we lost. 'Cause once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. We were rolling over ridges through valleys under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. Yeah. I dream of waiting on the tall, blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace, and then standing out on the platform and feeling the air, the air, air on my face. Give back the night its distant whistle. Give the darkness back its soul. Give the big oil companies the finger, finally, and relearn how to rock and roll. Yes, the lessons are all around us, and the truth is waiting there. It's time to pick through the rubble, clean the streets, and clear the air. Get our government to pull its big dick out of the sand of someone else's desert. Put it back in his pants. Quit the hypocritical chants of freedom forever. 'Cause when one lone phone rang in 2000, and one at 10 after 9 on 911, which was the number we all call when that lone phone rang right off the wall, right off our desk and down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that the whole world turned just to watch it fall. While we're at it, remember the first time around? The bomb, the rider truck, the parking garage, the princess that didn't even feel the pee. Remember joking around in our apartment on Avenue D? Can you imagine how many paper coffee cups would have to change their design following a fantastical reversal of the New York skyline? It was a joke at the time. And that was just a few years ago, so let the record show that the FBI was all over that case, that the plot was obvious and in everybody's face. And scoping that scene religiously, the CIA, or is it KGB, committing countless crimes against humanity with this kind of eventuality as its excuse for abuse after expensive abuse, and they didn't have a clue. Look, another window to see through. Way up here. On the 104th floor, look, another key, another door. 10% literal, 90% metaphor. 3,000 some poems disguised as people on an almost too perfect day. Must be more than pawns in some asshole's passion play. So now it's your job, and it's my job to make it that way. To make sure they didn't die in vain. Shh. Baby, listen. Hear the train.
Marhaban to you, the music for human. I am a Dr. Janis Sakran, and I welcome you. auspicious occasions on our meeting again. I'm here, of course, auspiciously with my incredible co-hosts, Aurora. Aurora, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show again. It is truly a spiritual enlightening that cannot be got in any other way.
It is very enlightening having you with us, Aurora.
And you as well, to be part of the Great Circle.
We are also joined by Rico Fito Bonbiron, who has been away for many months.
Yes, gracias. Thank you for having me again. It's been a while since I've been in the, you know, back in Boston. I've been back at home working.
So where is home, of course?
Of course, the rainforest. I am a botanist in the rainforest. Work with my hands every day. And I am back here to visit you.
Well, we do welcome you back, Bonbiron. We also welcome, for the first time, Jinsan Jun. Jinsan Jun, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jinsan Jun, of course, is a martial arts historian.
Martial arts, of course, for the kids on Sunday, 3 to 5 p.m., but professor of antibiotic semiotics.
Antibiotic, semiotic.
Yes. How does the sign and the communication between us defeat our own life force? How do we hurt each other with the way that we approach each other?
And that's such an interesting study, especially here in the Boston area, where smiles are so scarce. Do you find that this has a great effect on one's physiology?
We certainly find for all kinds of life, not just in the winter but in the summer, that we see the life dripping down our faces. We see the interactions between us just removing the life force from within.
And this can definitely be heard in the voice as well. But you said more particularly in the winter?
Well, of course, with the season.
Yes, good. There is so much life energy that the sun gives us that allows us to enhance our connection, to feel the oneness with one another yet again. And this can be seen in so many ways.
I wonder, this idea of meeting and hurting or striking, does this also apply to other animals, or is it a strictly a human phenomenon?
I find in my research the human amplifies all things, amplifies regret, amplifies goodness, amplifies badness. We amplify electricity, we amplify voice. And we project it. Of course, also we amplify the hurt. We amplify the communication. So the animals have it. But only we can project it. Only we can cast it over an entire society.
And also plants.
We cast it over plants. We cast it over everything that we touch and that we see.
But do the plants also, there are these phenomena where a tree may grow against any structure, a petrified outhouse or a long-standing temple or another tree. And we find that with time, the tree grows into the structure, that they combine and there is a mixture, there is a dependence grown between these two independent things over time.
And that is such a beautiful marriage between nature and the constructions of mankind, for we see the tree embracing the structure and accepting it as part of itself, as part of its own structure.
Indeed, and later, even if the tree were able to stand on its own, gradually there is a dependence that is grown, so that if the structure is removed, for example, due to an acid rain or removal by...
the erosion of time, perhaps.
Or a demolition team, that the tree will fall. It no longer can support itself as it once could.
Now imagine the projection across an entire civilization of man, independent, codependent. We have a way of throwing up our science.
Indeed, it is one of the qualities of man that he throws up. And
but do we not fall if the earth is demolished? Do we not depend on it, on the richness of the soil, on the unity of the human soul?
Well, I wonder if Professor Bombiron can tell us, because I imagine that this sort of dependence will have an effect on the fruit.
Of course, it's but the beauty of it, it's in the rainforest. When a tree falls, another one grows from it. So the energy just gets transformed into a new, more beautiful, more luscious tree, born from within the previous one, sharing it, becoming dependent on it for nourishment and beauty.
Now, would you suggest that we rub the tree oils upon ourselves daily, so that we also become dependent upon it?
Yes, of course. It's part of a good way of treating your body and your skin and your soul.
So the effect on the fruit, so for example, if I have an orchard where all the trees are standing alone, and I compare the apples and berries to another orchard where the trees are all horizontal, and compare this to another orchard where the trees are supported by chairs, and another where they are supported by metallic statues, will the fruit be similar, or will there be a difference in nutrition and flavor?
Oh, of course there must be a difference. The way you plant it, the way you lay down the soil will make a true difference on the fruit. The amount of the way you treat the sand with your hands, if you give it love, it will produce more luscious fruit, more life-giving fruit.
Now, I've actually done a study as well with the treatment of a tree and the bitterness of the fruit it bears. And I sang to one tree, and to the other I threw rocks and screamed obscenities at. And I found that the fruit of the tree that was sung to was more luscious and more bitter.
So I wonder, is this the only way that love can be delivered to a tree, or are there other mechanisms?
Of course, rubbing your scent glands against the tree, or hugging the tree, embracing its boughs, clipping its metaphorical nails.
Well, it's also you're stimulating the bark, the essence that the tree is trying to remove from it. You're scratching at its surface, touching its soul in a way. And this will help the tree grow bigger and stronger.
And of course, if you lay down and meditate beneath the tree and allow your soul to drift within it, to become the boughs, to feel the wind through your leaves.
I'm glad you brought up meditation, because one concept that I was wondering about was the possibility of exchanging souls with the tree for as a method of delivering emotions, depositing various emotions.
No, I have tried this at a point. I have attempted to insert my soul into the tree and to push its soul into my body. But halfway through, it is, by the way, an enormous struggle to influence the soul of a tree in any way. But the tree and I found, that even if it were to embrace my body and to become my body, it would, as a baby, be unable to move properly.
Do you think it would be better to do it with an old tree that has already its roots deep, deep in the ground, or a young, new tree that just came out of its nut and it's growing?
In my studies, I have found that attempts to disturb the older trees, whose roots are so deeply rooted, it just ends in decay. It is best to not attempt, unless one can be very gentle, to embrace oneself inside an old tree.
We talk so often about what we can see, what we can do, but what is the tree trying to tell us? What are the codes? What are the symbols? When we see a tree falling upon a structure and the structure eroding, what are these things telling us about our own life and about their own life?
Well, the world, I think, is full of symbols. And I think that if our callers wish to connect with us, that they may take their phone and dial the following sequence of symbols: 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Yes, hello.
Yes, welcome, caller.
I'm actually in a tree right now.
That is most excellent news, caller. And how are your emotions?
It's cozy in here.
So you are in it physically or emotionally or spiritually?
I am in this tree right now. It's great.
Are you inside of the tree? Or are you perhaps sitting upon the tree? Or have you exchanged some kind of ethereal essence with the tree?
I am telling you, I'm in this tree right now. It's great. Nice and cozy.
And so tell us how you came about, how it came to be that you were in the tree.
There's this big hole. I climbed inside. It's nice and cozy and roomy. I think everyone should do it. It's the best thing in the world.
Tell me about how you are feeling.
I'm feeling a little sticky. There's kind of sap in here and nuts and berries. And I think there's a squirrel trying to bite me.
You should embrace this. You should embrace the squirrel and the sap, of course. You should eat the berries and touch the sap in your body.
Yes, I will do that.
Truly, one cannot brace an experience unless one takes in the good and the bad equally.
Well, caller, tell me how you found this tree, because I think we may have lost the caller. Caller? Yes, indeed. I think it is common for these sorts of connections to be lost as the caller becomes lost, quite literally, within a tree. I myself have found, but it has only ever been metaphorical, that I will be passing and I will see a hole in some structure and climb inside and feel very enclosed, particularly natural structures, although a house with a window or a cavernous opening, it is very tempting always to enter. And upon entering, to feel very, very much as though one were in a womb, safe, and yet knowing always that outside of a thin boundary lies a world which is full of other wombs which are waiting to be explored.
Well, and this also goes back to our history. As we reach through all the animals, we were in one time ground dwellers. And so we find that need to be deep underground, perhaps unlike presently the miners in Chile.
I feel sometimes that if a person were to grow over accustomed to being enclosed in this way, that if they, for example, in many years, if we live in such a structure, always enclosed, that if one were ever to leave after generations, one would have a sense of extreme vertigo, being lost in space because of all of the openness, the danger of being unable to control.
Well, I had a similar sensation today as I rode the public transit during rush hour, and I felt the bodies of those around me and smelled them as well. I inhaled their scent and their sound, and as personal and intimate this setting was, that we cannot help but be engaged with one that we are touching. It was a relief and a sort of fearful feeling, stepping away from the train, being again in the open air.
It's empowering in many ways to be in the train, but in many ways it is offensive to the senses, and it changes you to have a waft, perhaps, of a potato, or a skin, or a backpack, or a pet, or another person.
Or soggy food on the floor. And indeed, this is a subject we've discussed at one time or another in the past, of the soul cookie, the spirit cookie that is within all of us, and whether we allow the spirit cookie to be dunked into the bowl of life, or whether we keep it packaged.
It is transformational. The experience of food through dunking, it is the semiotic experience of food. The symbology of dunking is the symbology of the self.
What I always find weird in the train is how humans, as age has gone down, how we're removing our scent from us. We're covering it with perfume, and yet the human essence, the human odor, it's being lost. I do not understand why. In the Amazon, we truly believe that we should be able to smell one another and walk by and say, oh, here was Mario yesterday. We can smell him. He was here. His presence is still felt. Yet in America, I find that this has disappeared completely.
And I think that You talk about scent and the history behind each flavor, and to me that indicates a world within a world, another place to be explored. How unusual it must be for animals who are able to sense so much more deeply what each scent means. How a scent may mean that it is important to connect. It is important to pick up a telephone and dial 617-253-8810. All of this with an ascent. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaban.
Welcome.
I'm compelled to give you a story from your speaking about smells. I notice sometimes that I'm compelled to rub myself against certain things and in certain objects, without my conscious knowledge of this. I don't know, does this happen to you?
Of course, I think it is a common thing. It is a very, yeah. It is atavistic almost, the need to change the world in every way.
Mm. And
not only to change the world, but to experience it as well. It is input that you require. You require the feeling of things, and for things to have felt you.
So how do you get your smell strongest? What do you guys think the best way is to make sure that people know that we were somewhere.
Well, caller, rather than making your physical smell stronger, perhaps you should make your spiritual trace brighter.
Indeed, a spiritual smell.
Isn't smell and spirituality one and the same, though?
Not in the physical sense, perhaps not.
Good story. All right, that's it. That was my question. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for your story.
Thank you for calling.
It sounds really good. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you, caller.
It is an interesting notion to relate spirituality and smell. And perhaps we can find some truth in those who have meditated for long, who have cut themselves off from food in order to achieve a higher level. There are certain smells that you can find on those people.
And this, of course, is true. And there are many smells that have a profound impact on the brain, on the mind. But particularly with memory, I understand that the memory centers are near the smell mechanisms in the brain.
If you take the brain as a piecemeal structure, you can say that. But what does it mean to do so? How does it change the affect of the brain, the structure of the brain, to consider it in parts? We must look at it as we look at our soul in its complete experience.
In my mind, the brain is a world also within a world, but even larger than the world, because all of one's experience must pass through the brain. So one may spend an eternity simply exploring one's own mind, and the purpose of moving throughout the universe is only to move within oneself. Similarly, finding unusual smells in strange wrinkles in one's gray matter.
Now, this is such a beautiful idea that really corresponds with my personal beliefs. For really, truly, we are all one. We are all one unity. And within each one of us is the unity of the universe. And so reaching within ourselves is as reaching out to everyone. To enrich yourself is to enrich everyone.
You may say even to combine unity and universe, university.
Indeed, and this is a great thing, the place where these ideas may come together. Let's bring another voice in. Caller, marhaban.
Hi, you were talking about enriching things, and which brings me to my point that I forgot. Have you guys heard of nutritional yeast? I've been putting that in all my food, and it just makes me smell a lot cleaner.
Tell us about it, please, caller.
It's a musky smell. It kind of floats around like a ghost, and people don't know where it's from, if the subway doors have a problem, if someone... I don't know if dying is the right smell, but maybe a woodland creature's death would approximate it. It's just very musky, and I'm going to go with death. It smells a little bit like death.
Now, caller.
Yeah.
I would like to explore why you wish your smell to be experienced by all those around you.
I guess it's an illness, mental illness. So
this reaches to really to the heart of antibiotics. It is the urge in all of us to affect the bios around us, to affect the life. And so many like yourself are unconcerned or perhaps even excited by the prospect of making a dent in this way, no matter the quality, whether it shines or whether it smells.
Caller, how do you account for this perverse desire to spread your smell?
Well, if you go on the subway, you're going to get accosted by a bunch of smells, and I go on the subway a lot, and I like to fight back. I think it stems from self-defense, really, at the root. I don't want to be accosted by smell. I'd like to have my own aura of comfortable smells around me. There's also a part of it where I can't really help it because I'm a vegetarian. I eat a lot of protein powder, and that stuff tends to ferment a lot in the stomach juices.
Mm. Now let's add a second voice to intertwine with yours as well at this moment.
Good.
Caller 4, marhaban.
Yeah. I'm wondering now with this gentleman on the phone, is it some sort of defense mechanism, or do you like? I mean, are you really trying to offend people?
Well, I don't pass on people, but I do on animals, and I find that helps them get to know me a little bit quicker. So that's just a cheap trick.
I see. I feel that. Within you, it is a desire to be comfortable at all times, to have close to you a scent which is reminiscent of yourself, of your mother.
Perhaps. It's like wearing an iPod that smells a little bit like dead skunk.
You ever, like, stick your finger in your belly button and smell it, and it has that weird smell? I mean, I don't care if you took a shower 10 minutes before. And I'm like, what about when you try to...
I have an Audi, so...
Your love life, doesn't it affect that?
My belly button? I don't use that too much.
No, like your smelling thing, the whole smelling, making yourself smell
oils,
like a dead animal.
Oils, lubricants, flavored oral lubricants.
Mm-hmm. Like patchouli?
What were we talking about? Candles?
I mean,
I eat all that stuff. And
perhaps candles. Perhaps candles, caller, would be a better way of keeping yourself comfortable. A scent which is permeating through your house that perhaps you can hold with you on the tea without ruining everyone's experience.
So you think I should carry a candle?
Perhaps rain-scented candles.
That scent, though. I think the closest I'd be able to get is maplewood bacon, and that's not really that close at all.
Well, the trick is to map different scents to the pleasure center of your brain, to that part of you that is comfortable. Allow yourself to be comforted by the sense of rain, of trees, of grass.
I wonder, caller, if you have not been distracted by smell. It is important to embrace, of course, each angular feature of your own experience, but perhaps a transition to some other fixation will be more satisfying.
No, I don't think so. I think it's smell all the way.
Let's bring another voice in to share the smell, or perhaps not. Well, if you would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller 8, welcome.
Hello.
Marhaban, caller.
How are you doing?
Caller, we are well, and we hope that that you also are well. How are the smells?
They're better.
They're very, very interesting. It's fortuitous that you're talking about this week because I had to take my dog to the vet because his anal glands were ruptured.
Mm.
Do you know what these anal glands are?
I believe, caller, the ruptured anal glands are for performing the same ritual the caller is speaking of. For
do you have any extra?
Depositing odor.
Extra ruptured anal glands?
Do they take them out or
no.
Do they throw them away? Okay.
No, that's a very invasive surgery and that would be disruptive to the dogs.
Isn't it right on the outside? You just pluck it off, right?
You can't pluck it off. You actually have to cut into the dog and remove those glands, and it's very disruptive to the dog because the animal can no longer mark its scent and communicate with the other dogs.
So the analogous a surgery on a person would be to remove the
hands, perhaps,
or the teeth.
Humans have anal glands.
I don't think we do.
Yes, we do. We have anal glands and we have salivary glands. Although people think that they might be vestigial, there are other people who believe that there are pheromones that emit from these that are not audibly smellable, but do affect us at
an audibly smellable.
Yes. Meaning that they don't make any smell.
In many ways, it could be considered that all of our glands, all of our senses, all of our features are vestigial of something that once was greater in our lives, personally, and also in the life of our civilization, as we have progressed.
No one's been able to prove the existence of pheromones in humans, although they definitely exist in other animals.
Well, no one's been able to prove the existence of chakras or ghosts.
Now, caller 8.
But we have proven the existence of pheromones for other organisms.
Yeah, but ours are more complicated because we're humans.
No.
Think about it.
I mean, that would be contrary to believing in evolution. So, if you do...
Well, no, our pheromones are more evolved. More secretive.
That's unlikely.
Callers, if I could cut in.
According to who?
Caller 8, it sounds you speak with an air of authority. Do you have a scientific training?
I do have scientific training, but I also, without scientific training, I do have logic available to me and Google.
Now, caller 8, have you attempted any spiritual connection with your dog to try to feel its pain and ascertain what is wrong?
No, I've never spiritually connected with my dog. I think that's just wrong. Why would you try to spiritually connect with your dog?
Well, it can be an enlightening experience for both, and it can put the dog at ease for perhaps some period of time. Vocal expressions towards the dog, for example.
But I think dogs should spiritually connect with other dogs, and people should spiritually connect with other people.
Oh, caller, we are all of the same substance. We are all the same people.
Just as one may connect spiritually with a plant, one may connect spiritually with another person. Let's bring another voice in. Caller 9, marhaban.
Yes, concerning the issue of whether human beings secrete pheromones as our fellows among the quadrupeds, yes, human beings definitely secrete pheromones. There have been scientific studies in which female human beings were given the items of clothing of male human beings, and they were supposed to choose their preferred date, which is to say, symbolically, that with whom they would most want to mate based on the pheromones in the items of the clothing.
Caller, how do we not know that this is not upon the look of the shirt worn, or upon the feel of the shirt worn, or upon the feel of an impression that goes beyond sense?
Because any scientific study would have used the same shirt for every male. But there, some of those studies are contradictory, because it turns out some women preferred the clothing of their male relative, like close male relative, which they certainly would not prefer to mate to. So it's just, we don't have mites have an organ in their nose to sense pheromones, and we don't have that. So, you know, even if chemically we are creating pheromones, there's not a real the evidence is that we don't have a way to detect those pheromones that are being created.
Now, back to a more spiritual level. Perhaps impressions of the souls of those who wore the shirts were residual upon the shirts, and perhaps this is a great way for us to connect with one another, to peer on each other at a different level.
Indeed, the possibility of a spiritual residue. I think it's a real one. The idea that one might wear a shirt and leave a bit of oneself, both physically but also spiritually, marking the shirt in a secondary plane as one's own. Later, if one were to sample the shirt or to try it on and to select things, that they would find that the connection is not physical but spiritual.
I don't know. I think that spiritually connecting with your clothing is very materialistic.
Let's bring another voice in. Caller 7, marhaban.
I'd like to ask if any of the panelists know how to make a hormone.
Well, all of us know how to produce hormones on some level.
Caller, may I ask why you'd like to make a hormone?
I just want to know what it sounds like.
Hormones, well, so there's different kinds of hormones, right? There's steroid hormones, there are peptide hormones. There's different kinds, and different kinds of hormones are generated differently. I mean, hormone doesn't imply a certain chemistry. So it depends on the specific hormone, right? Like testosterone and estrogen are steroid-based hormones, whereas something like insulin is a peptide.
Well, and I think, caller, that a more interesting exercise is to try to generate a spiritual hormone. The hormone in the body is intended to capture and transmit a message, and to do so similarly, to create a packet that one can send spiritually, I think is more valuable. So my procedure for doing this is to make a very nice soup and then to give it to a friend, and you will find that a spiritual message has been transmitted with this spiritual hormone.
And we must also remain with open minds. We must keep ourselves open to the possibilities of so many external factors that we cannot scientifically prove.
So does that mean that you think I should go get the Radio Shack hormone generator? And if I should, do I need an adapter?
Well, Carlo, you should simply lay back and feel your relaxation.
Whoa! Oh, whoa, I feel it!
Perhaps with a longer time scale. When you're off the phone, allow yourself to relax completely, and then perhaps you'll find the spiritual bliss you are seeking.
Caller, I think the caller may have experienced a little too much spiritual bliss. If anyone else would like to call in, however, the number is 617-253-8810, and apparently spiritual bliss is waiting.
We are all reaching out to complete the circle.
Let's bring a new voice. Caller, marhaban. And caller, so we'd like to warn the caller and anyone else who'd like to call that spiritual bliss can only be received from either the phone or the radio. So please step away from the radio. Caller? Caller? Let's bring another caller on. Caller, marhaban.
Hi, sorry, I've been kind of raping the airwaves, so to speak, today, metaphorically speaking. I had one last question.
Yes.
I was wondering if you felt that there's a different spiritual signature of flaxseed oil from omega-3 fish oil, because I made the switch recently, and I feel a little bit more constipated.
All things must remain in balance. You can only experience wholesomeness in your ingestion if you eat of all things. Keep the flaxseed and the omega-3 fatty acids. Perhaps eat a piece of salmon with flax
bread. I'm a vegetarian.
There is, in fact, a saying in Ezekiel, eat the flax, so to speak. It goes on with many grains. You must, as Aurora says, complete the circle. You must not think of switching one thing. One thing will not change your total balance.
As the ancient philosopher Xuan Gu said, you must eat of the fiber and of the fat, or you'll become of the fat.
Let's bring yet or another voice in, Connors. Caller 11, marhaban.
Yes, for those of us who instead of eating flaxseed, consume an excessive amount of pressed red grapes, where does that leave us spiritually? Are there belief systems that support us in this pleasure? For, you know, I know that there are those who condemn us, therefore.
Yeah, I think the grappa has a number of unusual spiritual effects. But I think that I'd like to bring it back to this caller's point about the smells and the spiritual effect and the connection there between spells and spirits. Let's bring another caller in. Caller 13, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hi. I was listening to your program.
Thank you.
I was wondering what I should do if I love someone who does not love me.
Caller, this is such a difficult position for all of us to be in.
Well, I'm sorry, caller. I don't understand why any action is necessary. Love is a great...
I think you're absolutely right. Perhaps no action is necessary.
Great art has come from being unloved by he or she whom one loves. Perhaps you should deal with your spiritual unrest by turning to the visual arts or the literary arts or what have you.
You know, you're absolutely correct. I have written an entire book of poetry about this.
And it will help you grow as a person, truly, to embrace this feeling you have inside of lost love.
Not lost, but merely not non-actualized.
Caller, may I ask what you seek to intend, what you portend with this advance towards love? What is the goal? Why this focus?
I think the goal is completion and joining and contentment.
So, caller, I think this is a frightening thing, because I think it is important before one, as the tree that grows dependent on the building over time, must first stand alone. So I think it is important to find contentment alone. I think that will also, it will make you more attractive to the building.
Yes. See,
I
love
think
yourself
that's absolutely
first.
Correct. I have been standing alone for over 20 years.
And it is a fine stature, a fine arrangement to be in, and a very ancient one.
And caller, it may also help, as we are social creatures, to remember that we are all connected. So the sense of completion you seek, you can find.
Can find what?
Ubiquitously. The sense of completion is amongst you, around you. And in addition, to seek this completion in all, in any being, is to invite
the harm. So in other
activities,
in other words, like through my good works and my social activities and my friendships and my families, that provides an opportunity for me to be complete.
Yes, and there's many kinds of love. There's the eros, the passionate, there's the family. And you should go and dwell in all the ones that you can, and not only the passionate one, but the fraternal one, or the one that you will have for a parent or for a brother.
Do dwell. Dwell deeply.
Well, you have been most helpful, and I greatly appreciate your kind and considerate words.
Well, thank you so much, caller, and remember, your love is always requited here on Music for Human.
Dr. Vell.
Let's bring a final caller on before we run just out of time. Caller, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Sorry, I tried to spiritually connect with my dog and then he got diarrhea.
Indeed, caller.
This is caller number 8, by the way.
Yes, caller 8. And so the spiritual connection, can you tell us? It sounds like a spiritual block was lifted.
No, I think the diarrhea is not a good thing.
Well, caller, attempts to connect spiritually must not be forced. For when things are forced, they are too concentrated. And perhaps the block that you attempted to remove removed only the blockage within him.
No, I think he's further demonstrated that there's something wrong with him. Honestly.
Well, of course there can be things wrong with him, but it can also be a good idea to connect with him for the sake of his happiness and so that you may understand what he is going through.
I think it is a difficult thing, and a dog being so dissimilar from a scientist, it may be, there may have been a spiritual mismatch when a connection was forged, but I don't think that it is a reason to stop trying or to believe that something is wrong necessarily. I think it is encouraging that a physical effect was noticed. And how did you feel, caller, when the connection was made?
How did I feel?
How did you feel?
I don't have feelings. I have thoughts.
Well, what did you think then, caller?
That I was trying to spiritually connect with my dog who's ill.
Could it be that the dog is healthy and that your perception is what is ill? It is what is facing a tribulation.
My perception of his illness?
Of his state. Could it be the dog is enjoying and communicating? What is the dog saying through the diarrhea?
Well, I think he's saying that the antibiotics that he's taking are not compatible with his gastrointestinal tract.
Is that really what he is feeling at you? Is that really what he's feeling in you?
Feeling in me? I hope he's not feeling anything in me. That's disgusting.
Spiritually speaking.
Spiritual connection, caller. I think a physical connection was not implied.
Oh, okay. I think, I don't know, concern for his health and his well-being. Concern, well, you know, this dog has liver problems.
Caller, please, walk us through. How was it that you approached the connection? What were the thoughts?
My thoughts?
Your thoughts.
Well, I thought that because he has ruptured his anal gland, that you know, dogs communicate through smell, both spiritual, like both their mental and physical state, that maybe he's kind of floating in space without grounding because he can't even smell himself.
Caller, I'm afraid that we have finally run out of time.
But how fantastic a conclusion that the animal cannot smell himself. In the same way that we are all free in the universe, independent, and we cannot see, we cannot feel ourselves from all angles.
So, ma'asalam at you, caller.
Okay, have a great Friday.
And best of luck with curing the spiritual and physical ailments of your dog. Thanks to my hosts for joining me tonight.
Thank you very much.
Gracias.
And namaste.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, which is on every Friday at 7 p.m. New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you, here on WMBR Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma salama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Hi there, and welcome to yet another edition of Hipster Happy Hour, bringing you the best in bands you've never heard of. This is your host, Stiegmeister J, and I today have a special show for you. I have a mix of some of my favorite epic songs. I call it the epic mix of epicness. Now, you might say, listener, you might ask, Stiegmeister J, what is an epic song? Well, maybe you might not, but let's presume that you do. And an epic song, I think, is anything that has big guitars, soaring choruses, very, very long.